Bitcoin's script is pretty limited. You definitely can't do lending and borrowing. Or can you? That's the topic of today's episode with Robin Obermeyer, the CEO of Liquidium. Liquidium is kind of at the bleeding edge of ordinals and new tokens on Bitcoin and leveraging tech like PSBTs and DLCs, which we'll get into a nice, easy-to-use platform to unlock liquidity in your ordinals or earn interest by lending out your Bitcoin. So we cover a ton of topics as far as how they got into building an NFT lending platform, how does this tech like DLCs work, and what they got on the roadmap with Liquidium V3 that just went live. So this was a fantastic conversation. This is a team that went through the BFF Accelerator Program, Cohort 3. Shout out to them. They've been doing fantastic work. So without further ado, let me jump into this great conversation with Robin Obermeyer, CEO of Liquidium.
Welcome to Built on Bitcoin.
Robin, how you doing today, my man?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good, brother. I wish I was in NYC right now with all the degens, turning it into Ordinals NYC. But yeah, how's the vibe been so far?
Oh, pretty good. Like I haven't done too many things right now. I feel like this time it's really just parties. Like everybody's just like. When you look at my calendar, it's like all of the events are towards the evening, and then there's like three at the same time. But yeah, lots of ordinal side events and everything. Like yesterday, we were having dinner with the ordinal spot team, and after that, we went to some event, and the whole Taproot Wizard crew was there. And I was like, okay, these were the only people I recognized. These were the only people that were there. Ordinals is definitely present. Let's do it. But yeah, looking forward to the main event as well.
Yeah, I think I saw you just posted something about like a Magic Eden yacht party. And I'm like, that's the most degen shit to do in New York when it's like rainy and windy and nasty. Like, we're going to mimic the bear market and just punish ourselves for a party.
Right, yeah, the degen yacht party. No, it's cold, it's rainy. I hope this thing has a roof. Yeah, let's see.
Yeah, see how it goes. Dope, man. Well, lots to talk about. We have some history because you were in Cohort 3 of the BFF Accelerator and you've been doing some big shit since then. But let's take it back. You know, give us the brief background of like how you got into Bitcoin and then maybe how that leads into kind of like the early idea of building a startup.
Yeah. So I got into Bitcoin through basically investment research. When I was, I think 16 or yeah, 15, 16, something like that, I started looking into different assets I can invest into, and obviously looked into stocks and everything. When you're below 18 in Germany, and I think probably in most of Europe, you can't actually set up a trading account or something like that. So I started setting up a virtual virtual trading account, essentially, which is a fake trading account. I had like 25,000 fake dollars in there, and at that time I put everything into like really early stage companies that I thought will blow up, and then I turned like 25K into 75K or something. And I was like, oh, what the fuck? I should have done this with real money. So as soon as I turned 18, like I got a trading account and I looked into all kinds of assets where I can be early again. to do this with real money this time. And then sort of like I don't know where exactly, but then I learned about crypto and about like this new thing, this new network, this new blockchain, this new financial world that is opening up right here. And I thought that is extremely interesting. It's like so early, but it really convinced me with like sort of like everything it's trying to fix and how much it fixed already, or like how good the approach is of fixing a certain issues that are in our current financial world. So yeah, it I got hooked. I started investing into it and started reading like everything about all of the different cryptocurrencies. And I think Bitcoin is always the one that I felt like has the strongest brand, has the most people in it, is the most decentralized. And if any cryptocurrency will become the world cryptocurrency, it's going to be Bitcoin. Like, it's pretty obvious.
Yep. Facts. Now that's interesting, man. So you were doing investment trading. You wanted to do investment trading before you were 18. Like, I'm thinking back to when I was that age. Like, I was playing Halo. I wasn't doing jack shit. And you're like, how do I turn fake play Monopoly money into more Monopoly money? Because they told me no. Like, that's the catalyst.
Yeah, actually, when I was 15, I first heard about Ethereum. That was in when I was 13. So in 2015, I heard about Ethereum when it was like extremely new. I heard it on like a Minecraft Let's Play. And this guy was saying, like, invest in Ethereum. It's a new Bitcoin. And I was like, oh, shit, yeah, I will do it. and then I also, like, I got to the hurdle where, like, I couldn't set up a crypto exchange. And now I'm like, fuck, I should have done it.
Yeah. Yep, totally. Cool. And then, like, yeah, so it sounds like one of the big catalysts was going to a decentralized network brings down the barriers of entry. Like, as long as you have a wallet and you can move some, you know, fiat into crypto, it doesn't ask you any kind of that ID stuff. It just lets the smart contracts run. Anybody can partake. It's an open market. So, like, once you kind of have that in your head, how do you pivot from, like, play money land, like, there's potential here to invest, to starting, like, the first idea for this lending platform, which I think back in the day was NFT to loan, right?
Correct. So, I think like always like at that time where I got into crypto, I looked at like all of the different cryptocurrencies, as I said, and then also, of course, all of the different use cases. And I think one very obvious use case to me were NFTs in general. Like, obviously, yes, they are used for digital art and everything. And I'm like, I obviously love art now with like NFTs and ordinals and everything. But I think there is a much bigger, bigger picture to NFTs, like what NFTs can be, in the sense of like just tokenizing all kinds of ownership. This is the first time that we can have a digital certificate of ownership and not rely on like a physical book where a notary puts something into the book or something like that. So I think a huge opportunity. So I was very fascinated about NFTs and like thinking about what you can do with it. Obviously started investing into like digital art on Stax at that time, which is a sidechain to Bitcoin. So it was cool to me that like you had a close to Bitcoin chain that had NFTs. That got me interested. And then at one point I had like, I still have like over 150 NFTs in my Stax wallet. And I was like, dude, what can I do with it now? Like, I need more NFTs. I want to participate in some mints, but I'm a collector. Like, I don't sell my NFTs, right? I had this problem of needing liquidity because I wanted to flip some stuff, But at the same time, I'm also a collector, so I didn't want to sell too much. So yeah, then it was like, okay, actually thinking about like what NFTs can be, potentially real estate at some point, what are people doing with real estate? They just borrow against it. Like lending and borrowing is like the biggest market in the financial world in TradFi. So why not bring it to the decentralized finance world?
Yep, totally. And yeah, quick shout out to all the Stacks artists. That my wallet is a graveyard of dope art. I can't do anything with it right now, but it's sitting there. But you were super early to Ordinals. Like, you guys pivoted pretty early on in the process. Yeah, tell me about that transition, because that's a big jump to go from an L2 down to an L1 that was unproven, but it was hot. What was that like?
Yeah, so I mean, like, obviously my heart was in these kind of programmable Bitcoin things for the longest time. Like on Stacks, I was around when Stacks Art was the marketplace of choice. I was around when Megapond was minting, which by far was probably the most impactful NFT collection on Stacks. But then obviously it was always, Stacks was fascinating because it was close to Bitcoin. And I always wanted to tap into this huge untapped capital of Bitcoin, because let's face it, like, we have so much money in Bitcoin. Bitcoin is one of the top 20 assets in the world, much bigger than most companies. That's like a ton of capital sitting around, just sitting idle in wallets in hopes that it becomes like a higher value, which so far has been turned, was working well. And I definitely believe that it will continue going higher, but still, you also want to use your capital for some things. So Stacks was the first place for that. But when Ordinals came out, we were in my co-founder, Jay, he was in the Bitcoin Rocks Discord. And he was seeing how the people were like minting or like inscribing these rocks on chain. And he was like, he's not a technical guy. He's our CMO. And he was like, I don't fucking know what that is. Like, I don't know how to inscribe things. I don't know how to run a node. So I'm just going to fade it. And then days later, people were starting to sell them like via spreadsheets for like tons of money and no security whatsoever. Just like spreadsheets, Discord, OTC trades. And we were like, this is perfect. Like, this is, we love empty sandboxes where we can just like paint a new canvas and play around with stuff. And especially now having an alternative asset on layer one Bitcoin allows us to actually have something as collateral on Bitcoin. Because if you do like borrowing and lending without any sort of like credit scoring systems or stuff like that, or like without any trust base, you need collateral. You need over-collateralized loans. And previously on Bitcoin, that was pretty much impossible because you only had Bitcoin on Bitcoin. So you had to wrap or bridge your assets. But Ordinals were the first time that we had an alternative asset on layer one Bitcoin. So yeah, it was a no-brainer for us. Like, this is exactly what we wanted forever. So let's research about the Bitcoin technologies and see how we can pull it off. And yeah, we started building a borrowing and lending protocol before there was any marketplace live for Ordinals. So it was like, yeah, a lot of R&D that went into it. And yeah, because we basically had to build a marketplace and the lending functionality on top of it.
Yeah, you guys went straight into the deep end and just got to figure out all kinds of hairy problems, which we're going to get into. But before, yeah, so we've danced around some of these interesting topics around trading, lending, collateral, tokenization. But give us the high level, like what actually is Liquidium and what are you guys building?
Liquidium is the leading ordinal lending protocol where you can essentially use one of your Bitcoin NFTs, your ordinals, as collateral, and then you can borrow native Bitcoin against it. So let's say like you have a ton of ordinals sitting around in your wallet, but there is a new mint coming up. Quantum Cats is minting. The mint price is, I don't know, $10,000. And you're like, damn, I don't have 10K, but you don't want to sell your ordinals. Go to Liquidium, borrow against your ordinals, mint the Quantum Cat, flip it, make a profit, repay your loans, you're good. Like that's pretty much like what the people use it for, right? And then on the other side of the spectrum, so that's the borrower. And then we also have lenders. Lenders are the ones that have a lot of Bitcoin sitting idle in their wallet, and they just want to earn a yield on their Bitcoin. So they can lend out Bitcoin to the borrowers, and then they earn a yield on their Bitcoin. So we're basically the platform in between, where a lender can make a loan offer on a collection. So somebody could say, I am willing to lend 0.5 Bitcoin to any Quantum Cat. And then somebody can say, hey, I have a Quantum Cat, I will take this offer. Boom, now you have lender and borrower matched, and then you can start a loan this way. So it's a peer-to-peer lending protocol on ordinals. Yeah.
Love it. So typically there's a ton of value stored in these NFTs, and they're currently JPEGs, but they can be anything, you know, at the protocol level. They don't discriminate. It's just something uniquely identified. And typically the way to realize that value is you got to sell it. You know, you got to paper hand your NFT, you know, get that BTC, and then you can do what you want with it. So with this, now you can just use as collateral, take a loan, go do some degen stuff with your friends. You're good to go. And it's a two-sided marketplace. So you have, you know, people borrowing on one side and they're paying interest. Lenders on the other side, they're getting yield, all denominated in Bitcoin. So loving all this so far. But we're talking about Bitcoin L1 and ordinals. And Bitcoin script, as far as most of us know, doesn't have this kind of advanced functionality. So you can't really do lending and borrowing. You can't do collateralization. So what's the unlock here that makes this possible?
Yeah, great question. So there are different kinds of Bitcoin functions that we make use of. So one is very famous now, I think started sort of with ordinals to become mainstream, which is called PSBTs, partially signed Bitcoin transactions. A partially signed Bitcoin transaction is essentially a Bitcoin transaction where you define what happens. Like, for example, you can say, I will send you 0.1 Bitcoin, you will send me Satoshi XYZ, which could be an ordinal. And that's sort of the transaction. The transaction is defined, and now you just split it up. So like you have one party who will provide the 0.1 Bitcoin, the other party who will provide Satoshi XYZ, and you need the handshake from both parties. So you just split up the transaction into two pieces. That's what every like ordinal marketplace uses. So you probably like you're familiar with, if you list an ordinal, you sign a PSBT, and then if somebody buys the ordinal, they will sign the other half of the PSBT, and then the transaction actually goes through. So that's PSBTs. And then there is another thing called DLCs, discrete lock contracts. And that's the one that most people haven't heard of. So DLCs were introduced in 2017, and they are essentially a non-custodial escrow on Bitcoin. So a DLC has something called predetermined outcomes. And these predetermined outcomes are defined when the DLC is created. In our case, just to make it more comprehensible, the borrower and the lender, they get into an agreement. The borrower wants Bitcoin and will put down their ordinal as collateral. The lender lends Bitcoin and they want interest, or the collateral in case of a default. So they both get into an agreement, And basically, once they sign the PSBTs, in the PSBT, they will create a DLC. And now the DLC is used to store or to escrow the ordinal during the loan. And the DLC has predetermined outcomes, which is the borrower and the lender. So essentially, you define if the borrower repays the loan on time, the borrower will get back their ordinal. If the borrower doesn't repay their loan, the lender will get the ordinal. So if the loan expires and the borrower didn't repay, the lender will get the collateral. So in the DLC on chain, you basically have the predetermined outcomes, borrower and lender, and then there is an oracle attached to it, which checks the outcome, so checks the repayment. If a repayment was found, then the oracle decides to go with the borrower as the outcome. If no repayment was found, it decides that the lender will be the outcome. But yeah, the beauty of the DLC is essentially that even if, for example, Liquidium decided to rug, we couldn't because the DLC only has the borrower and the lender as the outcome and not us. So yeah, that's the beauty of a DLC. It's essentially a dumb smart contract and a version of a non-custodial escrow on Bitcoin.
Nice. You've clearly done this a lot because those definitions were fire. So thank you for that. I think PSBTs people understand well. I want to double click on DLCs a little bit because I think I'm bullish on them, but they're still pretty new. You know, wallet support's not super advanced. I think you have like Xverse and maybe Magic Eden are like the main two that support it.
Yeah, there is like technically every wallet can support it because we are just using PSBTs to create the DLC, and the DLC itself is just it lives on the blockchain. It's like its own piece of wallet, basically. So like you can create a DLC with every Bitcoin wallet that supports PSBTs.
Got it. Okay. And then the other thing that people talk a lot about once you understand DLCs is the oracle. So you mentioned, you know, these predetermined paths, you know, if this happens, do that. So like if you slap me in the face, I'm going to slap you back. If you don't slap me in the face, we'll live happily ever after. Like you can choose your path and it will go down that path. So the oracle, though, is the person. It's this thing kind of in the middle that's determining which path ultimately gets settled on Bitcoin. And typically, people are scared that this is an off-chain thing. That's the point of ruggability. So give us some color here of, like, how is it constructed on Liquidium when it comes to the Oracle piece?
Yeah, so the Oracle is a very, very simple Oracle because we don't pull any info. Like, for example, Chainlink is a very complex Oracle because it can pull information from the real world and bring it to the blockchain. Whereas in our case, it's very easy. Like we just check the blockchain state and we check if there was a repayment transaction or not. Like that's like really just on-chain checking, did something on Bitcoin happen or not? And it's like easily verifiable. And then we just like, based on that, we also post a signature on-chain. That's very straightforward. And then we are working with DeepLake for the Oracle. So they are providing the Oracle right now. So it's sort of like independent. And then, as I mentioned, like there is no piece of ruggability for us because only the borrower and the lender are two possible outcomes of the DLC. That being said, though, we are putting a very strong emphasis, or like we are going to open source everything on the Oracle side, and we are also planning to decentralize the Oracle. So we're currently in talks with DeepLake on that as well, to make sure that it's just like 100% transparent, and everybody who would want to secure this Oracle network as well could participate. So yeah, that's definitely something we want to do, but yeah, it's step by step, obviously. And I think the DLC is already a very like strong security element in this whole system that most other Bitcoin DeFi applications right now don't even have. Like most of them are just purely centralized at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned the non-ruggable piece is that there's only two parties involved. There's the lender and the borrower.
So exactly.
Worst case scenario, you're either going to get your collateral back or some, like, what's the worst case scenario of people, if something goes absolutely wrong, like what's the worst decision path here? It sounds like you either get your collateral, you get paid back, or the NFT unlocks. Is that like, it's that, it's kind of that non-binary, or is there something else there?
Yeah. So, I mean, like realistically, the absolute worst case would be that a borrower repays the loan and the Oracle, for whatever reason, doesn't pick up the repayment and still lets the lender unlock the collateral, because then the borrower would have repaid and the lender would also get the collateral. So they would get money plus collateral, which doesn't make sense. Yeah. So the borrower would just have lost everything. However, we do have a bunch of security checks in place, and also the reason why we are not doing like an automatic unlock is exactly because of that. So like if you repay, even, or like let's say there is no repayment registered from the Oracle side, then what happens is, like, probably you would think if the loan expires, the lender automatically gets the ordinal. But in our case, we basically have a stop here. Like if the loan expires, the lender will be able to claim the ordinal from the DLC. So it's not automatically transferred to the lender, but instead we give the lender the possibility to claim it from the DLC. This allows us to add an extra layer of protection here, where we basically also check from our backend as well as from our frontend again, that there is, basically that we can confirm what the Oracle is saying to release the unlock part on our UI as well. So like we're always sort of like double checking what happens. And then only if we basically got two proofs from the Oracle as well as from our side, we are showing the person that they can unlock the collateral.
Got it. Okay, that makes sense. So then, yeah, assuming people are liking this, and like there's a lot of users on Liquidium, people are taking out loans and they're earning yield. What's kind of the expected returns or like interest rates for both sides of these parties? Like I'm putting a loan out for a Node Monk and I want to throw up some collateral BTC and earn some yield. Like what's that looking like right now in the market?
Yeah. So right now we are only focused on non-fungible tokens, as I mentioned in the beginning. So ordinals, we are currently like, these loans are considered high risk loans to some degree because there are only like either successful repayments or defaults. There are no price-based liquidations on purpose because that's like a very, very, like for NFTs, a peer-to-peer lending market without price-based liquidations makes the most sense because it introduces the least risk for manipulation in the market. For example, what we saw on BentDAO on Ethereum, they had a peer-to-pool system for NFT lending. And essentially what happened is that borrowers were taking a bunch of loans and then they were dumping on the floor to trigger a liquidation cascade. And it basically spiraled and they had to force sell all of the NFTs and it just like drained millions of dollars from the market. So like it's since NFTs are illiquid by nature, it doesn't make sense to treat them like fungible tokens. So we are purposely doing peer-to-peer loans. we are purposely not introducing price-based liquidations. And therefore, the lender carries the risk that they, like, if a default happens, the collateral might be worth less than the loan amount. That rarely happens in reality. Like, most of the times, the loans are repaid anyways. And then if the loan is not repaid, most of the time, the collateral is even worth more than the loan amount. So you still get plenty of money. But given this higher risk, the interest rates are quite high. So you are looking at between 100 and 200% APY. So that's around like 2 to 2.5% on a duration of 7 to 16 days. So like really, if you do an OMB loan, you get like $500 in 14 days in interest, which is pretty insane.
Mm-hmm. Yep, totally. And so the way, so because you're in this high risk category, the way that you guys combat that currently is making the duration super short. So like nothing is above like roughly 2 weeks right now.
Exactly. Yeah. Nothing is above 16 days. Only blue chip collections are close to like 2 weeks. Everything else is pretty much at 7 days. Just because, yes, obviously there is high volatility. We want to create an environment where loans are repaid and where sort of everybody has an incentive to do the right thing. Obviously, lenders are sometimes happy to get the ordinal instead of the money back. but at the same time, we want to encourage good behavior.
Yep, makes sense. Okay. And then something I keep seeing on Twitter is V3 will melt faces. Like, it's coming soon. I'm ready for my face to just drop. What are you guys cooking for V3?
Oh, yeah. V3 is live on meltingfaces.liquidium.fi. it will replace our app tomorrow. So our legacy Liquidium app will shut down tomorrow. Melting Faces will be the new thing. It will be app.liquidium.fi again. So it's just like for now, it's Melting Faces. But V3 is Liquidium rebuilt from the ground up. Like literally, in November, we decided to begin from zero again. So we blank GitHub, just started from the first line again and started coding everything from scratch, sort of with the intention in mind that we build an architecture that is perfectly like perfectly resembles what we want to build and that sort of addresses everything that we got in terms of insights from our users and future features we want to do and so on. So, the legacy Liquidium version was really an MVP. That was something where we built to be able to iterate extremely fast and just build things, get them out there to test them with users. And it was a very successful mission so far. I mean, our legacy app brought us over $40 million in volume and over 8,000 loans. So God bless the legacy Liquidium app. But it's time to move on, to go to the next chapter and create like a really, really, really good user experience with like crazy fast loading times and like killer features. Yeah, I'm super proud of what our devs have been building. I think Liquidium V3 is already melting faces. it's definitely great. I can highly try encourage everybody to try it if you tried the old version before, because you will immediately notice like the speed, the filtering features now, the time to get a loan reduced massively. You can now like go to your portfolio page, edit your offers, manage all of your loans. Like it's sort of this platform where you can just spend hours a day to like create new offers, change them slightly, go a little bit here, go a little bit there. It's pretty cool.
Hell yeah, bro. I'm loving your excitement right now. It's getting me hyped up. So by the time this episode drops, it's already going to be live. So people can go check that out. Hit the link down below. Cool. I think we covered most of the Quidium and lending piece. We talked a lot about ordinals.
I wanted to just also something that we have been preparing for also as part of V3, and you might spot it if you go to our app, fungible tokens. That's a huge thing that we are working on, and I think it's something that will like unlock a lot of capital in the market. BRC20 is huge. Runes will be huge, and there is like so much capital, and there is no borrowing and lending protocol for fungible tokens on Bitcoin right now. So having the technology that we already build, and then also we might be working on some cool shit which will potentially introduce liquidity pools to Bitcoin. I think we will be able to create a dope experience for BRC20 and Runes lending. So yeah, that's also part of the next chapter. This like one-stop shop for borrowing and lending on layer one Bitcoin. No matter what Bitcoin asset you have, come to Liquidium, get a loan. Like that's really what the long-term vision of Liquidium is.
Love it. No, that was actually, you took the words out of my mouth. That was my next question, was like alternative collateral types. Because, you know, ordinals are here now. Other more like real estate, other kind of like NFT tokenization is like, currently it's a pipe dream. It's not quite here yet, but I'm sure when it's there, you guys will support it. But coming soon, when soon, runes and fungibles are like right on the horizon.
Yeah. And rare sets. Rare sets is also something cool.
Oh, nice, nice, nice. Okay, we'll see if we see the epic sat listed on the Quidium. That would be wild.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, cool. I guess one question is, you started on an L2, you came down to an L1, and L2s are a hot topic right now. Everyone's talking about L2s. And largely because we saw some pretty crazy fee spikes during some of those periods where it's like, damn, doing anything cost me like $100. So as that gets sustained, we're going to move up to L2s. Do you guys have any early eyes on ordinals bridging, supporting an L2, anything like that? Or are you just kind of wait and see with L1 as far as you can go? And when you need to, you'll go there.
Yeah. So that's a great question. And I definitely see the need for layer twos and scaling solutions. I do think mainly for high frequency and low fee things, like environments that require high frequency throughput and like low fees, will massively benefit from any sort of layer two. That being said, though, I think looking at other chains and sort of like, yeah, obviously history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. We saw even during bull markets, when Ethereum gas fees were like $500 or something, people or like value was still on Ethereum. And high frequency stuff, for example, high frequency trading or something, was another layers, which perfectly makes sense. So like layer one is always this anchor with all of the value. And then there is like little layers that are good for a specific use case. Us being a borrowing and lending protocol that focuses on high value assets that can be collateralized, I think our future will continue on layer one Bitcoin, and we will be in the centerpiece of the whole Bitcoin ecosystem. However, that doesn't mean that we will not look into moving to other, or like not moving, but adding support for other layers in the future as well. So definitely always looking into it and sort of like looking what we can do potentially on other layers. I think it makes sense for particular use cases. Like if there is one layer two that is used for a lot of trading purposes, it might make sense to also have borrowing and lending purposes there. But yeah, our anchor will always be on layer one Bitcoin and in this, yeah, on the mother chain where all of the untapped capital is locked.
Yep. Okay. No, I mean, that makes sense. Like there's something very sticky about L1 liquidity in spite of everything else. And especially for luxury assets, like, you know, high value ordinals, it makes perfect sense. Okay. I got two more questions. They're going to be left turns both times. But first question, you know, you've gone through the whole Bitcoin founder journey. Like you've started something, you've switched chains, you've fundraised, bleeding edge tech. Like what's this podcast is largely for founders. Like what's been some of the biggest hurdles or lessons since you've been in like the Bitcoin, been building as a Bitcoin founder?
Well, I think there is like definitely a lot, like every second week is a nightmare. Every other week is a fucking blessing. Like it's always like it's ups and downs, and, resilience is something that every founder has to have for sure. And I think that's sometimes a part where you're like, I never considered giving up, but at the same time, it's sometimes hard to be like under the constant pressure of thinking like, hey, maybe a competitor will come and they will do something better. Like what is there that we are not seeing where there could be a potential weakness that somebody else comes and steals massive market share from us. So that's like this constant pressure of like where could be a weakness in our system is definitely something that is a huge challenge. And then other than that, I think it's also like it is largely about being at the right place at the right time. So for us, ordinals were perfect because we wanted to do borrowing and lending for alternative assets as close to Bitcoin as possible. And then we were preparing, we were gearing up for almost a year on Stacks. And then when we saw that opportunity coming to Bitcoin, I think that's what it takes. Like, be prepared to be at the right place at the right time. Like, there can always be the right place at the right time, but if you're not prepared for it, you will not be able to take this opportunity. And in our case, like, we were only able to take this opportunity because we already knew how to build this thing. And I think that's definitely, one of the key lessons I learned. It's like, be prepared for every outcome.
Dude, that was a fire answer. I mean, resilience for sure, huge. And like having a good team is helpful there because being a founder can be very lonely. And so you have some people to kind of like in your corner and be like, we're building dope shit. No, you're not crazy. Healthy fear. I like that one. And being able to pivot. Like you saw, you know, this new opportunity. You were building for a year on Stacks, you said, which is like there's sunk cost there. You don't want to give up on what you were building, but you just kind of toss it because there's a bigger thing here. I love that. Okay, so last left turn question. Outside of Liquidium, you can't mention what you guys are working on. What are you most excited about right now, kind of in the Bitcoin space broadly?
Hey, that's a great question. I'm very bullish on the Arch network at the moment, if you're familiar with them. They are building some pretty dope stuff. And that's also when I mentioned about the sort of pooling that we're experimenting with. That's something we're working on with the Arch guys. I think Amin and Matt both are very smart guys. And I like to see smart contracts or like more functionality coming to layer one Bitcoin, because every other, like every network does it layer two or a roll up or whatever. But I think it's way more exciting to bring like smart contracts to layer one Bitcoin instead. So yeah, that's something I'm really bullish on for builders. And then other than that, I think we are still seeing like runes everywhere.
Yeah.
And I think runes will be a new chapter for like Bitcoin fungible tokens and like actually potentially opening the doors for mass adoption of Bitcoin fungible tokens. BRC20 was always difficult to use unless you, of course, would use it on a centralized exchange. Runes changes that in that you can also easily learn how to use runes without like a lot of understanding of the protocol. BRC20 was always like you needed to know how BRC20 works in order to use BRC20, because you needed to know like, I need a transfer inscription. The transfer inscription becomes invalid after I transfer it once. Then I need to inscribe a new transfer inscription and yada, yada, yada. So that's like something you had to know with BRC20. I think runes will change that. And I'm also quite bullish on that.
Good answers. All right, man. That's all the questions I got. We covered a shitload. Anything I didn't cover do you want to close on?
No, I think that was pretty good. Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely, man. Well, then drop us the obligatory links. Like if people want to go do DJ and stuff with their friends or make some money, like where are they going?
Oh, go to app.liquidium.fi. Invite your friends, referral links, get 10% off the points that your friends are earning. Points are the alpha. Can't say more than that right now. The points are the alpha. Yeah, app.liquidium.fi.
All right, we're going to clip this out and put it on repeat. Points are the alpha. perfect. Robin, man, this has been great. Thank you for coming on, brother.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening this far into the episode. If you found it enjoyable, please do like, subscribe on whatever platform that you're listening on. YouTube does me a huge favor to like and subscribe. Find me on Twitter at Jake Blockchain. Show me some love. I reply to every DM. And if you are a Bitcoin builder that is kind of at the forefront of building new use cases, whether it's L1, Lightning, Stacks, Rootstock, Rollups, Ordinals, BRC20, I want to talk to you. So when I'm not doing this podcast, I am the sourcing partner at the Bitcoin Frontier Fund, where we invest in Bitcoin startups at the earliest stages, give you access to whatever you need, whether it's legal, product, fundraising help, as well as capital. So let me talk to you. You can hit me up. Again, find me on Twitter at Jake Blockchain and shoot me a DM. I'll read everything. Love to talk to you guys. All right. Peace.
Welcome to Built on Bitcoin.
I know that things don't always go your way, but I'll be right.